Wow, that's different, isn't it? Like, no yelling over the theme tune. Well, anyway, we've got something different today. I'm sitting in my lounge room. The pod is set up in my lounge room, which is weird because I can see all my stuff instead of gaming walls and things. But, what we've got is a friend of mine. His name's Fran Gilhooly. He's an actor from Scotland, and he was in a whole bunch of interesting stuff, and it looks like he's going to be in some interesting stuff that us gamers are all into. And I'd had loads of conversations with him over the last two, three years. And I thought, he's over here on holiday at the moment, and he was around the corner, and he's staying with some friends around the corner. And I was having a chat with him, and I thought, you know what? I think Seven Line Hand Guys listeners, people, would enjoy this conversation too. Find a little bit about Guardians of the Galaxy mostly. He's in a show called Outlander that I know nothing about. He's auditioned for Game of Thrones as well in an upcoming episode for the next season that we haven't seen yet. He can't tell us too much about that, but he gave me a bit of an interesting insight into that, which involved a lot of spitting, but none of that's on the podcast, and I might be able to tell you about that in person another day. But yeah, it's a bit of an adult kind of mature interview, which is a bit bizarre for us here on Seven Line Hand. So I tried my best all day at work. You know, I was before I did the interview because he came over last Wednesday. I don't know what that date is. I don't know what the date is now. What does it say on the computer? 9th, Sunday the 9th. He came over the Wednesday before that. You do the maths. All day at work, I was thinking, man, how am I going to do this, you know? And so I didn't do too much work, mostly just thought about the interview. And then after the interview, I spent up most of the night just being awake and not sleeping very well, thinking, how does the interview work? How did it go? So I hope you guys really enjoy it because, it's got some good stuff in there, I think. I'm not going to be on whatever TV show does interviews soon, but that's what happened. Another thing would be that this is a chance for you to get to know him too. You listen to this, we'll put his picture up on the site. When he's in something, you'll be able to go, hey, there's that guy I heard speak to David on Seven Land Hand of all places. And you never know, maybe what we should do now, if this works out, if this is good, then just chuck us a like or a comment. And maybe we should ask people that come to Supernova or Comic-Con whether they'd come on our little podcast and have a chat to us. Maybe we can find out some cool info. So everyone else that's completely not interested in this, but you want to know the Arcadia Quest password, well, that's coming up right after this. Matt and Justin are coming over to my house in a minute. It's just turned 1, so they should be here now waiting outside. And we're going to do a quick neats and twos after this because we're raving big time about Arcadia Quest. So much so we wanted to go deep and play it all the way through from level 1s to level as many levels as we can. So we'll release that podcast a month after this one. So after this one, you'll get the usual magic podcast. And then 2 weeks after that, the Arcadia Quest review will be in. But we thought we didn't want to deprive you of the Arcadia Quest password. So we'd get together and do the neats and twos and chuck it in there. Well, I don't think we have any neats. I don't know if we've got any twos, but we've definitely got a password. So the guinea fowl's around. I've got a guinea fowl just rocked up at my house. I don't know why. He's just walking around. Why am I talking about a guinea fowl? This is gaming stuff, and we're about to do an interview. But guinea fowls are bizarre. There's like this blob of gray with a tiny head and legs, and very fast, and they get up trees. Anyway, what's that? That's 5 minutes of bullshit. Okay, here's the interview with Fran. I hope you enjoy it. I don't know if I did a good job, but hopefully it's interesting, entertaining, and I'll see you on the other side with neats and twos, eh? We'll see how this goes. You're here. Happy days. Come from back from Mandurah. Is that how you're pronouncing that at the moment?
Right, Mandurah. Sunny Mandurah. There you
go. Mandurah, yeah. It's sunny with dolphins.
Right, I caught
caught a dolphin.
I caught the smallest fish I've ever caught in my life.
Yeah.
In Mandurah. From a secret spot. Everybody has secret spots.
No, there's a lot of...
Where you can catch bugger all.
Yeah, it's actually for a lot of Italians, aren't we? with all these secret spots, which they say they have and say they take us to, but rarely happens.
Yeah, I'll take you to a spot where you can catch nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Secretly. I'm half worried that, some of them, for the first time ever are going to tune into this podcast and listen to this and find out what we've been up to. But we'll try and keep it clean, hey?
Brilliant.
All right, so initially you've got it's Frank Gilhooly all of a sudden, IMDb guy. What happened to Fran?
Well, the Frank thing happened. No, the Frank was just a simple thing years ago when I started.
Yeah,
I'd done a little play in the Edinburgh Festival, and I got picked up by this agent, and she says, "Oh yes, we must call you Frank because back then, going back 12 years ago, before everybody had everything digital, they were flicking through books." And Fran could have been confused with Fran, a female.
Right.
So she's, no, we've got to go Frank, because it's pretty firmly masculine.
Didn't she ever hear of Travis, the band, whose lead singer is called Fran?
I bet that was that was after.
Was it?
That was after.
I thought they were a 90s band?
No, I think they'd really got heavy just after I started acting.
So. I suppose they're not marketing themselves as... Fran, whatever his last name is,
it's not for the public, it's for the people who are casting directors. They flick through books so fast.
Yes.
Now they don't flick through books. Now they're looking through digital stuff, so you can be whatever you want. But back then, they're flicking through books, and sometimes they don't have photographs. Years ago, it's just bang, 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 and they look at the names and say, "Oh, I'll try him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a girl.
Leave it.
Frances or Fran could be either.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Because I was thinking, even with all of most of your, what do they call, headshots, whatever, you've always got a beard in those. You're always playing the tough guy.
Nowadays, I've got a beard in most of them.
Yeah.
But I'm not always a tough guy. I'm desperate to get a part as a lover. I keep saying that to my wife. If I can get a part as a lover, that would be fantastic. But the only lover part I've had so far was a guy who was a really... How can I word it without being insulting?
Let's
say a very strong homosexual.
Yeah, is that what they thought? Is that what they looked at your photo and thought?
And I got this part, so it was dead funny. That was in a movie called Festival. Annie Griffin. If you ever look up Annie Griffin, she had a show out over here in Australia called The Book Group.
Okay.
Which done quite well.
Yeah.
So I done that little part for her.
So they only hetero love scenes you're after at the moment.
Well, that would be good.
That was the challenging thing. I was thinking about that today. I thought, what happened, if we're talking about, how you got to acting through various things. I always thought, when I was at uni, I would look at the acting drama people and be terrified that I'd no impulse to go and do it. But if I was ever to get caught out and have to go and do acting, that would make me strip off into at least my undies, maybe more. And I'd have to parade around doing something in a field, in front of the rest of the campus. And that was the big...
Would that scare you?
Yeah.
That wouldn't bother me in the slightest.
How'd you get to that? Because, it's like you... I think that's it. I thought, in conversations that we've had, you've come across... You've got, an amazing amount of confidence all of a sudden. Or has it always been there?
No, I don't know. It's just that kind of thing doesn't bother me in the slightest. Yeah. I don't know. A lot of people are really worried about their own... their body, nudity, all that sort of thing.
Or even showing emotion on, accessing it and being able to go, I'm upset.
Well,
we spend most of our times...
To be the best actors is to expose your vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
And that's that, and there's not a lot of parts that let you expose your vulnerabilities, because that's to be vulnerable.
Because we spend most of our time covering that sort of stuff up, don't we? And if we've got, if I'm at work and I know I've got a certain weakness or a vulnerability, I'm spending most of my time making sure that I don't expose that and people
If you're in a train station and you find out something, say you're in a busy place like that and you find out some terrible news or whatever, and you Yeah. Something you really must cry. What do people do nowadays? You know, people turn away and hide their tears. They hide
run off to
tears.
The toilets.
And it's a sign of weakness. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
Emotions and tears are a sign of strength.
Yeah, if you're comfortable. Yeah.
No, they're a sign of strength. They're a sign of strength. But the trouble is, society tells us we're not allowed to show that.
Yeah. And so digging into that, though, I mean, because, you know, you had, like, what was it? You know, looking at your IMDb thing here, you know, you said it was you were working until 2001 in labouring and, like, doing land work and landscaping and stuff wasn't it?
I still have a little landscaping business. I mean, not as big as I used to.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy it. It's therapeutic.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a tangible product at the end of what you do now anyway, isn't there?
It's good you know, I meet a lot of people doing that. I enjoy it.
But you don't have to show emotion on it. Someone goes, I can only offer you half of what you've quoted me for there, and you'll be like bursting to tears.
Who you're working for. I'll tell you, I've had my patience pushed a few times. It's therapeutic. It's hands-on. You get dirty. You get sweaty. It's something I need to keep doing, I think.
Yeah. You say that now, but, you know, given a full schedule of acting gigs.
Well,
he's still going to be getting into the bulldoze.
I wouldn't be desperately keen to do it. But, you know, you need to keep something like that up. And if we do just ignore it and drop stuff like that, that's wrong.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. It's a certain role that you identify with and it becomes part of who you are. You can probably transition from one thing to another, can't you? But you can't just drop one and move to the other. No. Otherwise, you lose your identity. And you. Oh. Yeah.
And the thing is, that's who I am. I've done that since I was... 15.
I'd love to make fun of your age, but I found out today that a couple of days ago, were born in the same year. Well, we won't mention what year that is.
Right. The only thing is, I had a paper round. It was uphill both ways, uphill there, uphill back.
Right. Does that work?
Everybody says I've had a hard life.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks I'm in my 50s.
Yeah. Really? Oh. And they tell you that.
But the thing is, I'm not that bothered.
No.
I'll say to my wife all the time, I'm like a fine wine.
You're getting better. Yeah, you're getting better. So you're doing that sort of stuff. Let me backtrack a bit. I was thinking about it today. I was thinking, you know, when does something become, when something can be a hobby, something can become a job, and there's like this mid ground. And I'm wondering if the acting thing is in the mid ground yet. Is it a job yet? Is it employment yet? And it's because it's more than a hobby now, isn't it? Because what we'll get to later on.
Do you know the.
It's not like you just go and, like, if I went down to some shitty local playhouse and forgot my lines and bluffed my way through 2 weeks of some rubbish play, you know, that would be a hobby, and I would go, well, I'm not doing that again.
No, you can't quite do that when you walk into a film set.
No.
There's high expectations.
There is expectations,
I was dropped in at the deep end because stumbled into acting. I'd just done a play with the Edinburgh Theatre Workshop.
Yeah. A
fantastic organisation. They don't exist anymore. And I just stumbled into it really because I then done I looked at a magazine at the end of that little show. It was 15 shows or 12 shows? And then I ended up getting a role in the Edinburgh Fringe, which actually starts in a few days. And this was 30 shows.
Is that the Fringe Festival? That's
Fringe
different
Festival.
To the comedy
it's the biggest
one?
Fringe is it Festival the... in the planet. No, it's everything.
Right.
There's comedy involved in it.
Yeah, so I've heard a lot plays, of comedians kind of that.
There's something like 4,000 plays on it. It's ridiculous. Some of them are real awful, but there's some real, real great.
You were in a good one?
I was in a good one.
You were
in
a good one.
And I got approached by an agent, and that's how I got started. So I was lucky because I knew people, I had people in the play, that very play, that were desperate to get an agent.
Okay.
I was like,
really? Wow.
You know, I didn't care. So I actually, when I got...
It's tough to get an agent. I didn't get an agent. It's nearly as hard as getting a gig.
It's been so hard for some people. And this is people who have been through drama school and stuff like this. You know, I've been through landscaping school.
Landscaping school. But you have a 50-year-old head. Attached to a 30-year-old body, you are.
That's it. But it's funny because I remember that now. That was my... I was just turning 30. It was my 30th birthday.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of people from the play at this. And it's so weird. When we finished that play, I didn't bother getting back in touch with the agent. She'd left me this card.
Yeah.
I left it 2 or 3 months.
And oh, really?
I stumbled across.
Playing hard to get.
Well,
the thing is,
I just didn't care. And it wasn't high on my agenda. And these people would have given the right arm yeah. for somebody to approach them. And eventually I did. And she was so nice. She was like, oh, my God. Oh, yeah, come in.
Yeah. What was the difference then? What do you think? What would you put? You know, like, so obviously there's people that put a lot of time in, like you said, drama training and all that sort of stuff. What was the difference between their skilled of years approach or to your, what, intuitive approach, was it? You know, like easier.
No, I think some people overtrain. Some people train the wrong way. Do you know what? If you want to see the best actors, just look at kids.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to name drop here because I've done a job recently with Ken Loach.
Right. And
Ken Loach is one of the world's greatest directors. And he asked me this question about... How do I change from being me, Fran, to living in my heart and my surroundings to living in the surroundings and the heart of the character? And I just went, oh, my God, Ken. Oof,
yeah.
Way over my head.
Right, you just play. And is that what you're saying?
If you look at kids are the greatest. And I actually said to Ken, I says, Ken, I'm a great believer in the old philosophy. What do you say to someone with a degree in drama? Can I have large fries with that, please?
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. Fries with that degree.
And, because every one of these people just goes and works at McDonald's. They get their degree.
Move to LA.
They take it no further.
Yeah.
Right. And if they do get an agent, they think, that's me, got an agent now, I can sit back. And that's nonsense.
Yeah.
The agent gets paid 15% of the money. No, do 15% of the work. You've got to work your arse off.
Or just getting out there and meeting people. That sort of stuff, yeah.
A lot of it's on the internet, but a lot of it is down to making films and making your own stuff. You know, I've got a huge project we're doing next year, and it's just get forward, get doing it, and get the team together, get the money in, and get it made. And that's...
So early on, so that Edinburgh Fringe Festival, that 2001, and then between then and, you know, mid-2000s, you covered quite a lot of ground. There's a lot of stuff, you know. The IMDb thing lists from, you know, what shall I name, like The Bill, and there was Rebus. Well, and
The Bill, I think I was the most violent. Like that. I think I was one of the most violent characters ever in The Bill.
Right.
But The Bill, did you just get that over here?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he did, because I remember getting some texts from people over here that had seen it, and they were like, oh, we just seen you, Fran. But The Bill... Scottish guys are always violent.
Right.
In The Bill. It's ridiculous. You know, we're the nation of thugs.
Yeah.
But no, it's good work. It's such a shame that's finished now. But...
Oh, they've stopped making The Bill altogether, have they?
Completely finished.
Oh, right.
And it's a shame because Taggart's completely finished as well. Did you just get that?
Yeah, we got Taggart. Isn't, like, Rebus, isn't he one... Isn't that a...
That's finished, like, as well. They might make more.
There was a detective or something that was part of the Taggart early days crew. Is that the same one? Perhaps not.
No, I don't know. It's Ken Stott. Ken Stott was he's a great Scottish actor. He actually played one of the Hobbits in the latest Hobbit movie.
All right.
The three movies. He's really good. But these are all finished. And it's such a shame because The Bill, it's funny, working on The Bill was like a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
You go in the morning, you're given a colour, you're on Lilac today, you've
got like a
factory
team.
Process. Yeah. Whereas, because they're always filming three or four shows at a time. Whereas Taggart, I've been that a few times. At Taggart, it was really artistic. They took their time. And if you ever get a chance to look at the two, you'll see that Taggart, the cinematography in Taggart is like a million times greater.
But the amount of shows that they're pumping out, The Bill's got a lot more, isn't it? Constantly.
2 1-hour shows a week.
Yeah.
You know, Taggart.
So it's like a Coronation Street kind of thing. Yeah.
And The Bill ran the whole year.
Yeah.
Taggart was a 1 1-hour show a week for 10 weeks of the year.
Yeah, because BBC usually do things like 6 episodes, don't they? Six episodes in a season, and then that's kind of it, and then they wonder if they're coming back or not.
The BBC, I'm not sure. I mean, Taggart was always STV, I think. I always remember that, because in Britain, if it's got adverts, it's STV. The BBC never has adverts.
Yeah.
But I've done a few gigs for the BBC recently, actually. There's one still to come out soon.
Oh, dear, this one looks bad. And I've seen the photo from this. Right after Rebus, it says that you're in a TV series in 2008 called Dear Green Place, and it says Man in Thong. I've seen that picture, I think.
Is that worth forgetting? Well, these are the guys,
we don't want to mention
I
that one.
I asked to do this. No, I love doing these funny things. This was a favourite. A wee cameo for the guys.
I think you put it on Facebook, didn't you?
Have you ever heard of the show? There's a comedy show in Scotland called Still Game.
No, I don't think we've heard of that one.
Still Game is probably the biggest comedy show in Scotland's history.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, it's just, it's huge in Scotland.
Yeah.
Huge. The guys eventually fell out, and then they actually got back together after 8 years, and they made a stage show, and they ended up selling the Hydro, which takes 8,000 or 9,000 people, and they sold it out like 25 days running.
Yeah.
They made fortunes out of it. But one of the guys in that made this program called Dear Green Place and asked me if I would do this wee thing for them. So
yeah.
I seem to be keen on jumping into things that get my clothes off.
So you're going through these things. I mean, then it gets like, it says Taggart, then Case Histories, and all of a sudden it goes from what seems largely UK stuff to then we got Guardians of the Galaxy in 2014. So what was the jump? Was it the agent was like talking to somebody? What happened there?
It's just I suppose I concentrate a bit more. For the last couple of years, I've concentrated a bit more pushing my agent, phoning her, bugging her, but also pushing myself.
Yeah.
So, but there's also a few different things I've found. It's amazing the difference in results you get. I have this wee thing that I do now when I walk into an audition, I give everyone a hug.
Yeah, I know that's on your IMDb as well as a trademark.
Aye.
And it says you hug everybody and even... James Gunn was saying, how come you know everybody? He sees you hugging everybody.
Oh, Sean Gunn, James' brother.
Oh,
that was Sean.
Oh, yeah.
Sean was quite funny because Sean plays a really good character in this thing. And he's like, well, when we were filming,
yeah,
Sean actually played, he was going around, crawling around in a little blue suit, playing part of the, he was doing
like
the voice
a CG
for
character.
Rocket.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he was doing the voice for Rocket, but they were getting rid of his voice. This was just for everyone to react to.
Yeah.
But and he was like, how the hell do you know so many people? Because everybody would come because they'd give me a hug. But it's not, it's just, that's the way I am. I've done that for ages now. And it's, you never know whose day you're brightening up.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good philosophy. So you're saying, in pushing yourself more, I mean, how do you go from, you know, the BBC, Scottish BBC world to all of a sudden, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's a massive Marvel bloody...
It's
behemoth,
to be honest,
isn't it?
A lot more now coming. I mean, I'd auditioned for a part in Batman. Oh my goodness! No, the last Batman, but the previous one. I forget his name.
The Joker one.
I forget.
Dark Knight Returns.
The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for a part in that, and it was a nice wee part. I never got it, but. This was me starting to peck away at bigger parts.
Yeah.
You know, they're still small parts, but bigger movies. To make the jump to get a big part in a big movie.
It's more exposure, isn't it? I suppose as soon as the more people that see you will go, well, he would work for my thing that I'm doing over here. And yeah.
And the thing is, the bottom line is whatever anyone says, it's nice to have that on your CV.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it?
Oh,
I mean, that's what we're talking, you know.
I think IMDb has 8 million actors on it, something like that.
Yeah.
And there's only 72 actors in that film.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, it's like, I mean, that's why we're talking today, isn't it? Because, you know, all of these other things we mentioned, as soon as we talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, that's where, you know, the people that are listening to Seven Land Hand, which, you know, this podcast is, you know, they know immediately. It's like, if they haven't heard of The Bill, they haven't heard of Reba Sabato Taggart, they know about Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's an instant, you know, they can go there and they can see you in it, you know? It's an immediate
thing.
It
was such a good risk.
There's a risk. What was the risk?
It's the big risk for them at the start. Everybody was, there was a lot of people expecting this to flop, and even the BBC's guy. It's really funny because
they were expecting the movie to flop.
Yeah,
right. Wow.
Well, they were worried it might flop. You know, I wonder how this will go. And I forget the guy's name, but he does all the movies on BBC Radio 5 Live. It's their biggest movie critic, and. And he not only liked it as an unprecedented first, he went to see it 3 times.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He loved it.
But it is, it's like that, isn't it? It's got heart, that movie. It's just like, it's silly comic book movie, but it's got a lot of heart.
And it's funny, you know, everyone, they could have made this film 25 hours long.
Yeah.
We all had so many parts, so many scenes cut. Oh, yeah. cut, you know, that's annoying. Everybody, though.
Yeah.
You can't take things like that personally because everyone that's in it, you know, I think, well, wait there, that was cut.
Yeah.
I can't take it personally because Chris Pratt got it cut. Zoe Saldana got it cut. Everybody got it cut. You know, Dave Bautista. So you've just got to chill out and just.
Because it was a lot. From what we've talked about before, it seemed like there was moments of improv, like you were improvising your way. There was a scene that got cut where you were improvising your way. Zoe Saldana, you know, heading off to the showers to meet her doom. Well, and they.
You know, in the movie where they say. The guy's a London Cockney guy. Hey, take her down to showers.
Yeah, the blood will wash away easier down that way. Yeah.
So it's funny, but we actually, they'd done this beautiful scene where everyone was away and it was just us.
Yeah.
It was in silence and we were whispering all these things that we're going to do, really evil things.
Yeah.
Know? I'm not going to say them.
But, no.
but these were great as we're crunching our arm up our back. I was paranoid I was going to break our arm. Oh. And then we're going down these metal stairs. Because remember, this was all built.
Yeah. Huge, oh, I have to get into that. Yeah,
the fortunes they built on, they spent on it, and we went down all these different sets of stairs all the way. Now we had to do that like 10 times.
Yeah.
You know, now they never used it.
Yeah.
But there's loads of scenes like that where they just cut it. That's it. They have to choose what gives them this right size of movie, and a lot of it comes into budgets for cinemas. You know, all this sort of thing as well. But one thing everybody's pretty sure with Guardians is that they got it all right. The length of the film,
yeah,
the story, the content, the business side, everything. So good.
The humour versus the seriousness of keeping the comic book fans happy.
What a riot. The whole thing was just brilliant.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I mean, how much fun was that? It was just a good feel-gooder, but you could also think, yeah, it's an adventure at the same time that I can take seriously, but I'm also having a bit of a piss take at the same time. It's good fun.
It was funny. And, you know, it was so funny as well because all the actors involved in this was one of the biggest sets.
Yeah, you said you walked onto the set, like, because the introduction to the set was quite unique, wasn't it?
It's like they brought us in, they insisted we all come in early because it was a breathtaking set.
Mm.
And it's
where was this? Where was the set anyway? Was it?
It was it's in a place called Long Cross,
in
London.
In London, all right.
Which is kind of, I suppose you could. I think it's annexed to or associated with Shepherd Studios.
Okay,
Long Cross is a place where they film.
So it's a stage. It's a stage that they can build stuff on, and.
Well, no, it's a giant complex. The building is so high, it's so huge, but they film Top Gear there.
Okay. You know, Top Gear.
But they wanted us to come in at least a day or two before and see what we were going to be working in, because. It was so big. The set was so incredible, and even the smells, you know, they had little things going, you know,
putting like steam and stuff, yeah.
Stuff like that. And the temperature was in the 30s when we filmed.
Okay.
So they then had, you know, they had crates of water going around on Fortless, because people don't realise on the set like this, you've got maybe 300-400 people following everything around. There's a crew, in fact, there's a crew of 500.
Even 300-400 people breathing adds a lot to the humidity and.
It was unbelievable.
The comfort levels.
So they brought us in a couple of days before. So we'd all been introduced.
Mm.
And, you know, it's quite hectic. You're going through final costume fittings and all this sort of stuff. And it's really interesting. But when we went in, you're like...
it's stepping into a different world, right? Absolutely. It's got to be, because they're just everybody
crazy.
Knows.
It's just crazy. It was just exact. You know, it's whatever you might expect.
What you see on the screen is stepping into that environment.
Absolutely. Mm. It's just unbelievable. You just almost felt like you're in a prison in space. It's ridiculous.
So there's a difference in the set. I mean, because I think of Doctor Who and Red Dwarf looks like it's been made out of a cardboard box and spray painted with something from your local hardware shop. But these guys know how to put a set together, right?
This was pretty...
Yeah.
I mean, you won't get anybody to beat this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've done well years ago with films like Alien.
Yeah.
A lot of time when you think it, a lot of time they cheated because
a lot of shadows there. Yeah, that's
so you couldn't see a lot.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't in darkness. It was full colour inside a prison. And it was they had one of the biggest blue screens ever used in history to make it look like it had 100 floors.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you looked up and it went on forever. When in actual fact, it had 3 floors.
Yeah, still 3 floors is quite an effort, isn't it? Because there's actors on, I can't remember, like, there's at least that first balcony, there's just people just yelling and chucking stuff at the main actors, aren't they, you know? And
it's unbelievable. In fact, there's a funny story with that, because if you look at Zoe's reaction, right, who plays Gamora,
yeah,
And she has this really harsh look up. And it was dead funny because that was real. Somebody smacked her with something.
Right.
You know, she's so lovely, but she was not happy. This was somebody threw this from like 30 yards. Right. It threw it so hard and it hit her.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she was angry. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
You know, she had a reaction.
Yeah.
And then went, and cut. Who threw this? Come on, that's not fair. I'm going to have a huge
It's not like if you're throwing it 30 metres, you've got a good aim, is it? You know, you
can... Well, I don't know what it was it threw. It was like a fake rock or something.
Yeah.
But they made it plastic, but it whacked her.
Yeah.
But it's dead funny because you look at, you know, we're trying to pinpoint all the way around the different people that you're working with. You know, like the guy who plays Moloko Dar. He's the guy that comes in with the knife.
Yeah, the guy.
His knife stolen.
Yeah.
He's up on the first level.
Alexis,
his name is. He's a real good guy. And it's funny because the rest of them across there are a mixture of background and extras, you know what I mean? And stunt guys who are about to fight and throw each other off things. And that.
Yeah, I could see that as though hanging somebody off the edge or something like that. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So when you're doing the prep for that and you get brought in.
Yeah. Because, of course, all of that's staged, isn't it? It's like you guys are going to be hanging him off there and you guys are going to be arguing amongst yourselves.
And if you've seen the camera that came in, was a super silent, huge extending boom. So it could come through everybody, look at everybody, go up to the first deck, go up to the second deck, look around. And they had it all one. And two, so everybody had to, they knew what they had to do. So the sound you hear is all overlaid. It's so well done. It's clever.
It's overlaid later on. Because there's a scene with you and when Zoe Gamora gets thrown into her cell, and you can, it looks like you can hear you yelling, like, get in your cell where you belong or something like that. And it sounds like, is that actually you talking then?
No, because I said to James Gunn, it's so ridiculous. I'd say to James,
do I get paid for talking now?
Do you want me? No. I said, do you want me to do this in American accent? Because I'm not.
How many Scottish people are in space?
But the Americans can be quite anal. American audience want to hear American voices. It's really odd.
Yeah.
But James was dead open. He says, no, Fran, do it in Scottish. He says, do you think there'll not be any Scottish people in space?
There's Scottish people in Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Well, they're dwarves, right?
So. So anyway, so I says, well, if you're sure, but I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And he says, nah, I do Scottish. And James is brilliant.
Yeah.
So I've done it in Scottish. And it's funny to hear, eventually, to hear all so many different bits cut. And then they shove this bit in and they overlay it with
someone else says it.
I'll bet you that voice was Sean Gunn. James right. brother. I'll bet you. Because I think they got him to do a lot of stuff. He was so helpful with them. But no, I've no idea.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. So funny. The thing is, it's... I don't know, it must be cheaper for them to do that than ask me to come back down to London. Because it got edited.
Yeah, because I thought they would have to do... They'd lay those voices over the top, right, later on? Is that you come back and you...
Well, all they would have, you know, is me shouting.
Yeah.
No cell's going to keep you safe, whatever it was. But with a slight Scottish accent. And they're obviously, I don't know if the Scottish thing works in space.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to ban them from going to space.
it's so ridiculous, but that's what they do. But it's funny. You've just got to let them, they know what they're doing so well. I mean, look at, I think the film's done. It done 750 million at box office and it broke over $1 billion once it went to DVD.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the reaction, like, you know, from yourself, I think in Guardians of the Galaxy, there's certain stars in there, but they're of a certain level, aren't they? I mean, I think Zoe Saldana's been in a fair bit. Chris Pratt was known for Parks and Rec, but I hadn't seen him before in that. I've only looked at his stuff retrospectively. Dave Bautista, you're not looking at wrestling, you don't know the guy.
Well, Dave, it's funny because
Rocky Raccoon and Vin Diesel aren't even there, you know? That's like, you know.
Well, Dave Bautista, he's actually a really, really cool guy. It's funny because he was quite, how can I put this? I'm not going to say insecure because he's a big, strong, great guy, but
he's new to
he
it.
Was quite self-conscious about stuff. And he was like, there's a bit where we're shouting at Gamora when she gets locked in her cell.
Yeah.
And we part in different ways and, they've got this one pane of window all nice and clean and the camera comes down through there and you just see Dave Bautista just sitting there going through these. He's got a handful of baubles.
Okay.
He's playing with. I don't know if you noticed this.
No, I don't. That doesn't ring a bell.
Well, this is his intro.
Yeah.
It's the first time you see him.
Yeah.
And these baubles are storyline, by the way, because the more baubles you've got, is you get a bauble for every person you've murdered or every
horrendous
crime you've done.
Yeah.
And I was one of the baddies because I think I had 3 or 4.
Okay. So all the prisoners have got them, all right.
He had 12. Yeah, it's always on a bracelet or it's hanging on you somewhere.
Yeah.
You must wear it. It's to let people see how bad you are.
Yeah.
But this is from the comics.
Now, I thought, like, Gamora's supposed to be, like, you know, this ultimate fighting weapon and all that sort of stuff. And she kind of lets you get dragged off. You know, she gets dragged off and is quite vulnerable at different stages as well, isn't she? So how do they play that?
Because they've got to be able to say... you've never seen it because they cut this other scene as well.
Yeah.
And there was a real beautiful scene there. It's dead funny. James Gunn used to give out Play-Doh.
Right.
He'd give it out. I think he'd done 20 in the whole shoot. And if he felt somebody was doing above and beyond the Call of Duty, something really great, he asked them to give him a Play-Doh. Well, for him, it was a symbol of creation. It was when kids were creating things, and he always loved this. And
keeps the budget
and
down.
So it was like, but it was the gesture.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we done this scene where Gamora's lying there sleeping.
Right.
She's sound asleep. And then you just see Alexis's hand, Malokadar, you see the hand with the horrible nails coming over her face and covering her lips. And she wakes up in fright.
Yeah.
We're all there smiling and grinning, but we've got these knives and it's like, what are we going to do to you? Well, so she got caught and trapped really easily by us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
they
didn't show that because it was another thing. But we actually got, when we walked out, because everybody got quite a fright when we filmed that, because you remember a lot of the crew and other members of the cast are watching this on big screens at the back with the director. And we suddenly had this big applause come through. And everybody was like, my God, that was so scary.
Yeah,
creepy. And as we walked out, you know, they sent around somebody with this thing. James wants to give you this. It was such a great
scene. Out come the Play-Doh,
But they never used it.
Mm.
But it's funny, there's a few people done that where they've done exceptional scenes and they never used it.
Yeah. That would say something about her character, though, wouldn't it? It's like she's snuck up on too easily, you know, and then she can't be all-conquering later on if you know, it's just too easy to get one over her on that stage.
Well, she's just a person, but...
she's Gamora.
She's got to sleep. She's been petrified. She can pretend.
I was thinking, you know,
she's not concerned.
She's got to have some Hulk in her, though, because she's green. You know, your character must have known it was going to turn sour.
Maybe that's the next bit where the Avengers meet. You're going to find something out here.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a cool scene. I mean, that's probably what we want to get into. Your theory that no one was buying the other day when we were having a chat about when Gamora turns it around and takes you down and the other guy down.
Yeah, she kicks my arse.
But only with her elbow, not with a knife. That's what we've learned from that conversation, isn't it?
It's funny because we have this... we can't do this here, but I don't think I've showed you.
No, you did. Behind, it's behind the cameras.
James Gunn.
That's what I'm talking about.
He put up a thing online to let people see the motions of how they make these scenes.
Yeah.
So we put up... Because we've done a lot of rehearsals for this scene, for the fighting scene.
Yeah.
And there's a particular way that she swings round... cracks me in the chin with her elbow, but at the same time grabs my knife, and then she kicks me as hard as she can, and then she kicks the other alien there, played by Keely. I forget her second name, she's so good. But
it was a she, was it? I just took it, there was three guys there.
No, the alien was a female,
right?
And I forget her second name, but she's really nice. But so she kicks my arse basically, but
kill you. So, Guardians 2.
She doesn't kill me.
You're back.
She doesn't kill me. I'll tell you what did kill me, though, was Dave Bautista's last words to me. Because they were coming to the end of this bit, they insisted that they didn't want, in case there was numbers on the trousers or whatever, they asked me to lie there.
Awful, yeah.
You know, so they couldn't make any, because we all had different things in our trousers, so I had to lie there. And they're doing the next scene, where he grabs her by the neck and all this, but... And he kept coming over to me and he says, you know what, friend, you suck.
It's just the easiest acting gig ever.
I was like, I agree, because I'm lying there doing nothing. You suck.
We were watching it earlier with the kids, and I was, and because it's sort of chest and above, and I was saying, is Fran still lying there? Is he still lying there? But you were.
Well, this is the thing. they only cut to what they want later.
Yeah.
But it, while they're filming, you've got to give them everything. So they're like, no, we want this, we want that, we want, oh, great. I'll lie there. Yeah. Nah, you know, I'm happy to do anything they want.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So on the star thing, was there anybody that you knew before you went in there? That, you know, out of that lot, the principal actors, I suppose you would call them?
No.
Because it was quite an unknown cast, wasn't it? And that's the fun thing as well. I talk to Fiona, my wife, about it, saying that actors should have one role. They should come in, do this an amazing performance, and then never act again. So you know them as that guy from that movie, and they really just, but not, you know, Tom Cruise. Oh, he's that guy that, you know, he's doing this and this and this and this and this, and it just goes on. And
no, I mean, I knew one of the girls from costume and a few other people in that side of things. But
yeah,
not
from other jobs. Because they'll be in the UK, down at London, so they're hired.
Aye, well, a lot of stuff I've done is in London. But they also, a lot of the time, they'll come up with a bigger set. You know, they might draw people up there. But no, there was a lot of Americans on this.
Hmm. Were you disappointed about the prosthetics, not getting prosthetics, or is that... Or, you know, is that just on one side of it,
That. I wanted to at least be recognised.
Yeah.
You know, I know a few people that had such strong prosthetics, you couldn't tell it was them.
Yeah.
And I know they were a wee bit disappointed.
Oh, they were disappointed with that.
Well, yeah, because they wanted to be recognised in some way. So
see, that's one side of the argument. The other side of the argument says that you have a face that doesn't need prosthetics. And what are you telling me?
I keep telling everyone that I had a prosthetic stomach on because...
that's right.
I was like... Oh my God, I need to go on a diet.
Right.
But no, it was such great fun.
Yeah.
To do this. I can live in hope that maybe there's a bit for, if they want Moloko Darb back.
You're part of his team, are you, really?
Well, I was his kind of sidekick. So yeah. It's funny, in Marvel, they keep everything so secretive.
Yeah.
Nobody gets given a name a lot of time nobody gets a name. And I've got to say my agent slipped up with this, because you're supposed to kind of push a bit and say, look,
give me a name.
Give him a name. Because all they do is a guy with brush.
Yeah.
Woman standing in corner, you know. Yeah. Like Moloko Darb, he's actually a character from the comics, but he was just called Scarface Prisoner.
Oh, really? They didn't give
him a name. And it's I was the same, Burly Prisoner. Burly Prisoner. But we should have pushed by the time we did. That's a shame. That's a shame.
Yeah.
Because these little things make a difference to an actor.
But it's not just saying that because you hear, that was a really good, that's a fun scene that happens there, you know, with, you know, you've got Drax threatening, you know, like, did you know about this knife across the, you know, finger across the throat thing, you know, it's just classic. Something you can say and people will know that. It's either well written or it's, you know, it hits a chord. And his character is inherent in that, isn't it? Going to Chris Pratt, he's saying, "Yeah, I've heard of that."
Yeah,
and then Drax looks at him and goes, No. He's shitting himself.
It's just great. And these things were great to be part of, they really were.
Yeah.
I suppose my biggest thing I liked about it was the fact I got to work with everyone.
Oh, you did?
Do you know what I mean? I got to work with all the main stars. If you think it, from Groot, Rocket, Gamora, Star-Lord, Drax.
So what was, you know, you said that Sean Gunn was on the floor being Rocket Raccoon. What was where Groot was? Because that's a huge...
There was a guy there, I forget his name. I think he was from Eastern Europe.
Like a basketball player
or
something.
He was completely in blue.
Yeah.
He wore this a headpiece that had a pole going up another 3 or 4 feet.
Where his face would be.
With Groot's face in the front. So everyone looking at Groot was to look at this Groot that was 8 feet tall, 9 feet tall. So, and the girl, when they were doing actual action scenes and you were to look at Rocket, that was actually she's a beautiful girl. She had some really severe dwarfism, though. She was only 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely, I forget her name, lovely girl, lovely woman, but she was maybe in her 30s. So she would be all in blue.
Yeah.
And it's quite a funny scene to see. She's all in blue. She's got a wee tail out the back.
I think you've heard tail.
So you have to react to this. It was dead funny. But this is all, you can see they know what they're doing because it's.
Yeah, of course.
It came out so great. It was kind of amazing and so cool to be part of. But no, I'd love to see. The next Guardians has been filmed in Atlanta.
He's finished the script.
The script's done. I know that Chris, I know that he'd loved it and was actually in tears at finding out who his dad was.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I have no idea.
And that's about it, is it? Yeah.
Well, they're all...
You got a story about Chris's arrival on set, haven't you, with the extras and stuff like that, you know, where there can be... tell me about how Chris can be quite...
This was just every day. This was just...
Oh, every day?
Listen, this was just Chris. He was brilliant. So when we were in the green room, you always get treated very well as an actor. And... I'm not saying the extras don't get treated well, but there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
In this film in particular.
Yeah, there's a whole prison for them. Hundreds of them.
So they're all in place well before we come. And they've got people in charge of them, running, and telling them where to stand and, you know, right quiet now, the actors are coming in and all that sort of thing. But Chris, the first thing he'd do is come in when you're walking over to your location.
Yeah.
Where you're about to run through, and the first thing he'd do is walk along them all and high five and all that. You know,
that's cool.
It was so cool because I do know you see from time to time a bit snobbery about certain things. Oh, they're extras. Brilliant. What a great example. Chris
chills everyone out, surely. Everyone's
right
comfortable.
Away, Chris, how you doing, guys? How you? High five. Right away. And, you know, out with being a star in the movies. He is a star in real life. He's just a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's transformed, isn't he? Because you see him in Parks and Rec, and then you see him walk in and he's getting hosed down in the Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's after cycling across Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he's.
I want to know that workout plan that they get him on. It's
eight
amazing.
Eight months. 8 months is solid one to one every single day.
Yeah.
Radically. Changed diet.
Actually, I take it all back. I don't think I want that.
But if you look back,
yeah,
all of that, and there's only one scene where you see this.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, but it's, you know, fantastically recorded. You know,
it's iconic.
You can point to it for the rest of your life and go, that was me. That's how I looked.
It's true. They've done so well with him. And is it Sarah Finn? The casting director. See, James Gunn didn't want him anywhere near it, supposedly.
Chris Pratt.
Aye.
Right.
I read something that I was watching one of these interviews that James Gunn was talking. He was talking to some channel. But when she basically tricked him and she turned around.
Right, yeah.
She was like, because you've got to try this guy. And he's like, what, the fat guy for Parks and Rec?
Yeah.
Nah. But she got him in. And the second... James Gunn was like, okay.
Let's give him his
work. The second he opened his mouth, James Gunn was like, that's him. That's Star-Lord. That's him. Now we've just got to lose the weight. But amazing.
Yeah. But you know he's got comedic timing, which he's going to need at times through the... I mean, because that's it. He's got such an honest face, hasn't he? You know, the way he delivers some of the... You know, that scene that we're talking about where he's talking with Drax and he's like, you what? It's just a finger across the throat. You don't know what that means? And, you know, and he's like, his face is just like... It's a little kid that you used to go to primary school with. It was your best mate, isn't it? It's like, yeah, this is great.
The thing
you know,
is
we're
like
all
that
on board.
In real life. He's just a good lad. He's just dead laid back.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, really good guy.
Yeah. So we don't know chances of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You're getting into that.
Yeah. But listen, the chances are slim, but I'm no bothered.
There's other things,
embrace whatever the universe gives me, I'll embrace.
Right.
If that involves. If that involves being part of Guardians 2, that would be great. And I'm sure if it was, it would be a bigger part, so that would be good.
Well, there's something that you have been embraced by. Like just today, I was sitting talking to someone at work and they were saying, I never watch TV. I never watch TV. And I go, yeah, TV, rubbish, whatever. You know, I was half listening, half not listening. I'm doing stuff at the desk. And she goes, but I've been watching most of the series. I found myself, I'm 10 episodes into the show. And I said, what's it called? She goes, Outlander. And I said, I'm talking to the guy that was in there tonight, you know? And she's like, what, really? So that was when I discovered that you had an IMDb site. I didn't know that until then.
Oh, right.
And that was when the Frank thing happened. Here's a show I know nothing about. It's a woman reaching into the past from the, well, she's like, it's 1940s or something like that, and she ends up back in the 1700s. And
She ends up back in the Worst of Times.
In the what times?
In the Worst of Times.
Worst of Times,
in the,
right?
1740s, is it? I think when, if I get my history right.
And this is in Scotland, isn't it?
In the Highlands of Scotland.
Right.
I think she touches these rocks. You know these rocks that stand tall somewhere up in the Highlands? I'll be honest, I've not seen it yet.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Is it what, a natural structure, or it's something
it's
that's been...
one of the things that...
Dark Angel's man has like chiseled
used,
out and
used to pray to yeah. do whatever. These standing rocks, you used to stand them, set them in.
Mm-hmm. Built to suck people out of the 1940s,
like
bring them back 300 years. Yeah.
Aye. Well, she touches it and faints, or something happens, and she's suddenly transported back to 1740 odds.
Yeah.
And that's right at the height where the Highlanders are fighting. The English government, I suppose you could say. Because they have, if I get my history right, in 1707, they forced the Union upon Scotland.
Which
was the Union of the United Kingdom.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
They had in 1705 the Alien Act, which declared all Scots land in England, and all Scots as aliens. All lands would be taken back, and then eventually they said they'll suspend it. In 1707, if the Scots will sign to become part of the Union. Because you see, they were paranoid about the Scots allowing the French to attack them from the north.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because of this thing known as the Old Alliance.
Right.
Which is between the Scots and the French.
Yeah.
So they had pretty cruel times, and it was right at that time that they banned the wearing of tartan.
Okay.
They banned it completely. And, you know, people don't realise what the Scots went through, but if you were caught wearing tartan, you were sent off to one of His Majesty's plantations for a minimum period of 7 years.
Really?
Basically, you were sent as a slave.
Where were the plantations? This like
the colonies, you know.
Oh, anyway.
Here.
Not Australia. I was going to say, was it Australia?
But they were sent over to
Bloody
all
hell.
These different places, and these people were never seen again.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just rounded them up in their hundreds, thousands. And just got rid of them. So anyway, she arrives in Scotland at a particular time.
And does she know about this? So she's Scottish? Is she a Scottish character?
No, she's an English.
She's English, an English
she's
character.
She's actually Irish in real life.
All right. But for the character, is English.
English.
So then she ends up back there, and what is she all a bit more? But I don't know how... It's a very confusing era, isn't it? Because we don't have a good grasp on what's happening in the 40s as far as where people are. Because I'm sure they're not all like, let's all get along. We're a bit more chilled out, or at least trying that kind of thing now. Mm. But and then going back to the 1700s, what's the angle?
Well,
you know, what are they doing?
Her husband, it's quite nice because when her husband in 1940 odds, she has this life, but then she leaves it when this happens.
Yeah,
she's forced back in time. But her husband, when she goes back in time, this very same person, is an evil, horrible. Person working for
So it's the same actor playing
for the nobles or working for the wealthy, and basically, you know, he tortures people and does terrible things.
So when you're saying the same person, it's the same actor but
it's
playing a different character.
It just so happens to be so
looks exactly
the same actor.
Right? Yeah, so that's confusing for her when
I'm
she
assuming
gets...
this because this is stuff that I've watched and learned and seen little bits.
Yeah,
I got invited to the cast and crew preview of the first one, but to be honest,
because you're in season one.
I'm in the wedding episode. I play Torin the Ringmaker. I make this wedding ring out of a key.
Yeah.
That has a particular part of the storyline.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, I've been...
The girl at work recognised you. She said, that's Ian from the show.
Ian.
Yeah. So it says Torin here, but anyway,
Torin. And it's... So I'm hoping for a recall. You know when they have... The storyline... I don't know if you know any of the storyline, but...
I don't know the
books,
Outlander storyline.
The Outlander books. I think the first one was called... Is it called Cross Stitch or something like this? But they're by Diana Gabaldon. So everyone knows what the storyline is already.
Yeah.
So they're now started making the next 13 shows.
Yeah. Yeah, because I saw it got renewed just recently, I think, didn't it?
Well, quite a while ago, but I think I think this might be the third series getting renewed.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, because it's been a major success story.
Yeah, because it seems like there was a few novels. That was like, because the second season was going to be based on one of the other books that had been put out.
Well, the second season spends a lot of time in France.
Okay.
In Paris. But as far as I'm aware, the third season comes back to Scotland with a bang, and there's quite a bit of battles and different things like that. So, I'd like to think when it comes to all the weapons getting made and all that sort of thing, I'll be back in there as the local...
You'll be banging out an armoury for them.
Torin, and see if I can get part of that, because there's some... They do the Battle of Culloden, I know that.
Yeah,
so it'd be a huge thing. It'd be nice to be part of it. It's such a huge show.
I think I spoke to you, 2 years ago in Scotland, and you were, you know, there's the Scottish Film Industry, is that the title that they've got? Scottish Film Commission, something like that? You were doing a lot of stuff with those guys as well.
Oh, right, Creative Scotland.
Is that right?
Their name is, but they're, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I'm having a bit of a battle just now because I'm making a film, as I mentioned earlier, I'm making a film.
Yeah.
And we want to get funding so we can progress with this. We're progressing without them, but it would make our life easier if we could get 200,000 or 300,000 from them.
Yeah.
But the whole point of Creative Scotland is to be able to showcase and rear new talent. Now, if you
Scottish talent?
Scottish talent.
Yeah.
And if you ask me, what's the one thing we have a sort of dearth of at the moment and where we need more is new Scottish producers. Now, I can only get access to the money if I sign up with an existing Scottish producer who's had a track record.
Too bad if you're new and upcoming, right?
Well, so, in which case, what's the point?
You know, he's already made it. He's already in the loop, isn't he?
So, it just seems crazy. So we're doing it the other way about. We'll get there. We'll get the money.
Yeah.
We'll get the money. I would like to think that we might end up with over 1.5 million in all at the end to make.
Sounds like crazy money, isn't it? It's like, you know, and that's not a lot.
That's nothing.
That's nothing. That's probably not even the price tag on the Guardian set, right?
Well, it's absolutely nothing. I mean, Guardians cost 170 million to make.
Yeah.
So if you think of it, they were spending more than this. We were spending probably almost double this every day.
Yeah, just keeping everyone alive and cool in outfits.
But no, I'm hopeful of this. I really am looking forward to this. We've got some great actors coming on board. We've got people approaching us all the time.
Mm.
And it's one of the things I've taken from Guardians that we want to do with this. I see you have a here awesome mix. Volume 1.
Yeah, that's the Guardians of the Galaxy DVD.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, yeah. That's in the movie.
It's iconic, isn't it? Yeah,
the music.
Yeah.
He shoves it in all these wonderful tunes. Well, what we're doing with this film, our film's called Freedom for a Day. It's all about, how can I put it, the ducking and diving that Scotland had to do in this horrible situation.
Just recently.
Recently with the referendum.
Yeah.
Where democracy was taken away from people. But yeah. This is going to be great with the Scottish music. The talent that is in Scotland for music to go along with this movie is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to release an album at the same time as the movie.
Yeah. Sounds like you've got your work cut out just tracking down music. Well, I suppose musicians of a certain standard to be on it. Like,
are they happy
to come forth?
I could tell you. I'm not going to say their names.
No.
Some of the biggest, these people sell on every continent. And they were really pushing for Scottish independence.
Proclaimers.
And I'm talking about 5 or 6 different bands.
Okay, yeah.
Top bands.
Yeah.
That were selling.
You're saying Proclaimers aren't top band anymore?
No. The Proclaimers.
I'm allowed to make jokes about the Proclaimers.
I'll be very surprised if we don't end up with the Proclaimers in this in some shape or form.
If you do, or you don't. If you don't, right? Yeah.
There's a lot more than that. It's,
I'm out of touch with their work of late, so I don't know how much of a...
They're just back from America.
Oh, really?
They've been touring in America. I was speaking to their agent, do you call them? Their manager.
Hmm.
They're just back, but their voices are so well known.
Yeah.
But they've got a few songs that are absolutely synonymous with what we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah,
they're really. If you look up some of their songs, you'll see. But there's a few of them like that I want to get in. And I know they're well known in Australia because I've been listening to their music on the radio. So, but I'm not saying who they are because we've still got to.
I only know two. I know Proclaimers and Travis. And I know.
Well, you don't.
But is that? Yeah,
no, I can tell you right now. You know a lot more than that.
Do I? Or Texas?
They're going back a bit, right enough.
I know. That's all I know. I've only got musical knowledge from the 80s.
Who else would you know? Have you had your run rig?
I don't want to say yes or no, because as soon as I say no, then you know next week someone will go, you haven't heard of them, what about this song, you idiot? And they're like, oh yeah, that's right.
Another
one
we're in talks with at the moment, I chat Dougie McLean. He has Scotland's most iconic song. It's called Caledonia, and it's well, I'll tell you, it's when you listen to this song, it's a love song. He was travelling and performing. It's a love song he wrote to Scotland.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
It suits the movie.
It suits it perfectly. So yeah. We are actually in talks with him at the moment.
Yeah.
Met with him a week before we came over to Australia.
It sounds like an everybody wins kind of project, doesn't it? It's like
The thing is, we're not sitting here desperate on masses of profit. This is a social enterprise.
Mm.
So we want to genuinely show off new Scottish talent. So we want a couple of big stars in it. Mm. We want great new music. We've got one guy who I know we're going to have in this. He's had a very, very well-received YouTube video song all about the referendum.
And yeah.
It's had a millions of people have listened to it. So I'm pretty sure I've already had him referred to us several times.
Okay.
Because people now know in Scotland what we're doing.
Yeah.
So
so they keep saying this getting this guy on board would be a great idea. Yeah.
Aye. But there's a lot of Scottish talent, honestly, that in the music industry, so many of them that were pushing for independence. I don't think we'll have a big difficulty, because how can they lose? If we say that song there was amazing, it would suit this part of the film perfectly. Let's tie up a deal where we can help plug this, you can be part of this, you'll get your share of this album that goes out, all we want is our tuppence worth.
Yeah, because we just want to play it within the movie.
Well, we want to make movie 2 and movie 3.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not. This is the only political movie.
Yeah.
The other movies move in a slightly different way, but...
Right.
It's
Because you wrote the script.
Already written.
You wrote the script for this, yeah? Or you part?
No, I wrote it. It's I've got 4 scripts. But this... The movie we want to do is the second movie. Is the script's well and truly finished as well. But this movie, Freedom for a Day, is I'm so proud of it. And everyone I've given it to has enjoyed it. And most importantly to me, one of the greatest actors in Scotland, who I'm sure is going to tie up with us imminently, he loved it. He says he couldn't put it down.
You know, no names. We can't.
No.
No. Won't even push you on it then. Because yeah.
No, until once we tie up a deal with him,
yeah,
we can then, he can then help us draw the funding in.
Because it's kind of, I guess that as soon as you get a name attached, then all of a sudden other people are interested where they might not have looked before.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's only 2 ways to get people interested, and that is to have loads of money hanging out there, which we've not got, or is to have talent hanging out there. And the way to attract talent is in the script.
Yeah.
You know? So
I suppose, like where we started, you know, you're saying if you get an opportunity to convey emotion in your role, then that's something that an actor is appealing to an actor,
this
right?
This role, I mean, that sounds terrible because obviously I've written it.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
This role is just to die for. This guy, honestly, he's got tears of happiness, tears of sadness. He's got heartbreak. He's got incredible anger. There's so many things going on in this. But the biggest thing about this film that I love about as it's evolved is it's a liberating, happy ending. It's an inspiring, uplifting ending.
Yeah.
And that's important because...
Because it didn't end that way.
Coming out of Scotland. No. The thing is, it did. Well,
all right.
We lost the referendum.
Yeah.
But then look at the election in Westminster, just in May... Scotland took 56 of the 59 seats. Clearly, you know, everybody said, "Oh, independence is dead."
Right.
That. Well,
yeah.
This is why I felt we need to make this film, because Is that something that's dead, taking 56? Yeah. It's an unprecedented number of people back in Scottish independence now.
Mm.
Yet they supposedly just said no.
Meh.
And you can hear what I'm trying to say. From yeah. I don't believe for a second that Scotland voted no.
Yeah. I think an interesting point you've made as well, which, I mean, let me just throw it out there before we move on to the next bit, was mm-hmm. that the whole referendum stuff wasn't anti-English or anti-UK or anything like that. I think that's an important distinction, isn't it?
Aye. And yeah. do you know what? That's a really important point. I've got so many English friends, huge number of English friends. It's in fact, you could actually say that the country would be better off with everyone becoming independent of London.
yeah.
Well, the thing is, it's Westminster, but London dictates so much.
We have a bit of a thing going on here where, Australia's probably better independent of Canberra.
but, yeah. Probably. But no, you're dead right. And I hate when I hear people try to twist it into that. And the trouble is, if you watch the tactics at the moment of Westminster, they tried right up through the recent election to say this is an anti-English thing.
Which just gets those people on board that aren't going to necessarily give it too much time to think. Mm-hmm. They're just going to go, hang on, well, I'm English, so which side am I on? Tell me.
And then but that wasn't the referendum, that was the election.
Mm.
But the new thing I hear they're trying to do now, and we can see it, social media sees it clearly. It's funny how mainstream media never touches on it. But now they're making words to try and make, you know, the sectarianism thing, the Catholic Protestant thing in Scotland.
Only through football.
Protestants are generally accepted through Rangers and such,
like
football teams, as loyalists. Do you know what I mean? Unionists.
I'm not a massive political.
Well, what they're trying to do is just to split.
Yeah.
And cause a split. And I don't think it's going to work because I think the people in Scotland are too clever for that. They're too united.
It's an interesting point you raise about that, social media and mainstream media, isn't it? It's like the social media is almost like an instant democracy. Everyone has a look at it, everyone starts talking, and you pretty much get down. And it's quite good because, you know, the idiots get to say their bit as well, which I think is important because then you get to discuss the issues a bit more and it stays open. You know, if you just squash them, like a mainstream media will just say, all right, we're not listening to that point of view, or that's not the approved point of view, we're not going to hear it. But sometimes those are worth talking about.
It's worse than this, though, because the mainstream media has an agenda. There's a guy who's on our team now, a guy called Matt Lygate. If you ever get a chance, go on YouTube and type in Scottish referendum imperial masters.
Right, yeah.
And what you'll see is this guy who followed, basically, the Labour leader demanded that all the Labour politicians come up and help the referendum in the last week to try and push through the no vote.
Mm.
And this guy was so clued up in the way the media works. The media writes their story first and then they go out and try and get a titbit on TV so they can get this little interview. So what he done was he got one of these, what do you call these things where they cycle?
And they
take two people in the back. They have them in Japan. And
I don't know.
Forget the names. But anyway, he got one of these bikes. But he put 3 or 4 big batteries in the back. He got his friend to cycle.
Yeah.
And he connected up his iPhone and he played the Darth Vader music.
Brilliant.
Everywhere he went, he followed them right through Glasgow from the train station the minute they arrived. Everywhere they went. And he kept on shouting constantly, "Bow to your imperial masters." And you know what?
Star Wars fans
didn't
are crazy.
Get a chance to get their little interview. So clever. So clever.
All right, well, we got close to the geeky nerdy stuff there with the Imperial March or whatever Darth Vader is. All right, how much about Game of Thrones can I get out of you?
Oh,
zip, yeah. So there was an audition. Is there much of that? You went for an audition for a while. We've been very impressed with the. You've had a profile pic, which you've used on Facebook and around. And Fiona, my wife, and I, we play That Could Have Been Fran. You know, when we're watching Game of Thrones, you see, That Could Have Been Fran. That Could Have Been Fran. But it's there's an audition happen now, though, isn't there? Where
I got an audition just before I came to Australia for a part that's a reoccurring part. So he's in... several episodes and maybe the next series.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard. I can't say anything because I will you know, I can almost guarantee if I say that somebody will find it and I won't get the part.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really strict.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But the part is a good part.
Yeah. Horse riding. Is there a horse riding in it? You get told, or you can't say
I'm
that.
Not really
I'm gonna guess. All right, now, all right. I won't even guess.
There's stuff like that that I've got to do. It's a really cool part. It's a really nasty piece of work.
Can you ride a horse?
absolutely.
If they ask you to, absolutely. It's nailed on.
if they ask me to take a horse around Cheltenham,
yeah,
I'm not sure I could do that.
All right, not at speed.
But no, it's a. I would be. I phoned my agent today.
Yeah.
Still no word.
Yeah.
You know what? The thing is, I really wanted this part.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But there's more and more and more and more coming up.
Yeah.
You know the story where it's all.
Well, I think I ask about the Game of Thrones because it's in the wheelhouse of who's listening, and also it's fun. You know, like it'd be fun for people to look out for you. You know, and that sort of thing.
This
you know,
would be great if I get this part. You know, you'll hear me celebrating.
Yeah, yeah.
All the way across. the world, because
yeah.
it's a really good bit. This guy's a nasty, nasty, evil guy.
Right.
The one thing that... I'm not allowed to say anything about so I can't, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a spoiler for me, because now I know a few things that happen.
Yeah. Oh,
and I'm like...
It's all... part of the seasons which are beyond the books. Is that right? Because...
We are now moving beyond the books.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it would be great to be...
Yeah.
If I get this role, it's a real groundbreaker. It's a real beauty.
Can you get the Red Witch's autograph if that comes by? I'm a massive fan of her. Anyone that gives birth to a black cloud and convinces a man to burn his daughter, I'm on side with her.
That was scary, that. That was scary. She's absolutely gorgeous as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's also another reason why. It's 0.3 why I like her.
But that was a horrible part. It's funny how they have so many things in this that are horrible. I watched, you know, the guy that, I forget his name, the chap that wrote it.
I've always said J.I.R., but it's George R. Martin. Is it one R, two R's?
He wrote Martin. So many things. You know, a lot of this is all to do with Scottish history, and there's links with Scottish history all the way through it.
Oh, he's using that as a guide, is he?
All of it.
Little treachery, acts of treachery and stuff.
You know, Hadrian's Wall.
He's
used all these different things, but when he done the Glencoe massacre, that was at the end of season 3 or 4, where the pregnant woman and her husband, they all got killed and everything. God, I broke my heart. I was absolutely, I couldn't believe it. I was gutted.
I always felt like that, you know, in my limited writing experience, you hang things like that out there just to make your audience vulnerable, and then you just do something horrible to someone. You know, who are you most in love with? Which character do you love? Right, I'm going to do something horrible to them and just break your heart, and then you've had an emotional response, so it's a win, right?
You knew something was coming because I think they had his mother there as well, so it was the potential king to be and his bride to be. Heavily pregnant.
Oh, the red is it the red wedding that they called it? I think that's.
Oh, I don't know, but they had his mum there as well, I think. But as they closed, as the king went to his bed, the other king, and he closed the door, she heard it lock, and she was like, and she looked at one of the other people sitting there celebrating, and remember they'd been invited and welcomed in.
Yeah.
Under the banner of peace.
Yeah, that was a bit nasty.
And she just lifted his sleeve to see he was wearing full armour underneath.
Yeah.
And suddenly everything went, oh, it was horrible.
Yeah, horrible. That's good though, that sort of stuff.
Well, that was the Glencoe massacre.
Okay.
That was what actually happened.
Okay.
They invited them in under the banner of peace. And then they massacred them. And it wasn't a huge amount of people. It was, but this is
still bad for the people involved.
It was horrible. But good on him for doing that. It was heartbreaking.
So, is there anything we haven't touched on yet that is fun that you can mention that might be coming up that people can look out for you in?
You know, there's a thing coming here called Murder. It's a BBC project.
Yeah.
It'll be here You'll have it before Christmas.
You say that, but I went looking for Outlander on Netflix, our Netflix, the other night, and our Netflix is rubbish. I listen to all, you know, you listen to international podcasts and they'll talk about things, go, I'll watch this, it's on Netflix. But they're in the States.
Aye.
You pull it up on here. I put in something like Out L-A-N, and it goes, we don't have Outlander, but things relating to Outlander are these shows. And it's like, that's rubbish. What am I paying for, you know? I looked up Louis Theroux the other day. I got Louis space TH, and it went, Louis Theroux. No, we don't have any of that. But other documentaries, it's garbage.
You will get this. It's an incredibly well-written piece of work. There's three episodes. The series is called Murder, but each episode is a completely standalone movie.
Yeah, like the Black Mirror sort of stuff. Where did you see that? It was Black Mirror. It's like BBC does the Twilight Zone, and it was the same sort of thing. It was like three episodes per season, but they'd be hour long instead of the half hour stuff. Yeah,
that's it. And exactly that. But episode two, I'm not really well. It's again, you know, that these
spoilers.
Things, you know, to say, but
yeah, you might be in it. You might be
I'm a very key role.
Yeah, are you a bad guy again?
No, I'm a bad guy. I'm actually.
Oh, don't you? You know what? Twist.
You know what? You will have a.
Are you having a homosexual encounter in this?
Well, you know, I do a bit of rolling around on the floor with a guy, but it's a complicated story. But you have to watch out for this. I play a key role in it, and there's a very unusual. All I can say is it's incredibly unusual the way this is filmed.
Hmm.
Because let's say you have a police officer investigating something.
Yeah.
She'll have an idea. Oh, I think I'm getting to the bottom of this. And she'll turn to you, the audience.
Right.
And she'll tell you what's in her mind.
Fourth wall comes down.
It's weird. Yeah. It's weird. But it works. I was in doing some ADR work, which is just fixing the voice and doing a few bits of sound just recently.
So you can see how it's all cut together at that stage.
I start seeing it. Well, they were starting to layer the colours. You know, they always do this first and they get it so... Oh my God, the cinematography on this is amazing. Now, it's Birger Larsson. He was our director in episode two, different director in episode one and three, but he is incredible. And what he's done with this is amazing. So I hope the whole three are good.
And when do you expect Australia might find this?
Well, as far as I'm aware, it's one of these things, it's quite big, they've spent a lot of money on it, so I think it'll be in a lot of countries within a few weeks of each other. So I think we're expecting it in autumn
England, UK time.
UK, so you're so looking,
that's October-ish,
October November.
Alright,
Look out for that. It's really good.
Brilliant. No, we'll do. All right. Well, thanks very much. That was fun. I think we got through it all.
Cool. Thank you.
All right.
Time for another beer.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming in, friend.
Cool. Cheers, mate.
Nathan Twos. This completely bizarre format of rambling intro, hopefully half decent interview. And now this, Neats and Twos, guys.
I don't know where I am right now.
Yeah, keeping it great.
I know. I listened to the intro just before we started this, and we've got a hell of an echo. But this is how the inside of my house sounds.
That's it. It's cavernous.
It is.
Coming at you live from the secret lair.
The bat cave.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's weird, because you guys haven't even heard that interview yet, so you might be tailing off the biggest piece of crap ever. Disrespect to Fran. All on my shoulders if it's no good.
Wow.
We'll find out come Monday, I believe.
Does this set like a precedent of, you know, just inviting people out? Like, who we just got to find some people now and just interview them?
Yeah, that's what I was saying in the intro. We should just do that. Just like spam everyone that's coming to Gen Con, Supernova, Comic Con, and just go, hey, you want to do an interview? Unless the... Oh, no, I'm not gonna say unless they're... I had a name, a celebrity name on the tip of my tongue then. But I won't say that, because even if they said yes, we'd probably do it.
Well, right. there's all those interesting gamer people, like Andrew Sweet.
Yeah, any designer or...
Wesley Lamont. So
yeah.
If we get those sort of people in, that'd be interesting.
Ooh,
for people.
Wesley Lamont.
Yeah.
Wesley Lamont. Cogs, he's coming up.
Yeah,
we'll do an interview with him
super.
Soon.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking to him on Thursday about that.
Good.
Anyway, this is Neats and Twos.
Neats and Twos,
So you said Gen Con was on. Anything, did you go?
Oh, no. Gen Con over in the US.
On the US?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
The biggest gaming event, board gaming event on the calendar in the US, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you watch it? Did you read it?
I read lots of it. Yeah, lots of the Board Game Geek and all that sort of thing are doing previews and reviews of things, new games that are coming out, all that sort of stuff. So it's a good place to get the what's coming up, what to watch for board games. Yeah.
Yeah. So that reminds me, we should get that Kickstarter segment going as well.
We fits nicely.
This is the R&D neats and twos, isn't it? That Kickstarter idea we had, we should do? Yeah, we should do that. Anyway, time's passing by. I suppose on the neats and twos, God, the biggest hit of the week, apart from the gag post on the Facebook page, was that Aaron Graham premonition segment.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
Totally came true.
Dude, I heard about this. Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
He headed off Mark Rosewater with a few statements on the last episode. So if you want to find out what they are, go to the Facebook page or go listen to Aaron. Just tell everyone before they even knew it was going to be real.
He's got some sort of ability, hasn't he? He's almost a magic superhero.
He's a mage.
He's a mage.
He's a mage.
It's almost like he's just played magic forever and understands how these things work. But
yeah,
that too. He's obviously magical in some way, shape, or form.
Aaron is magical. That'd be a good name for a book. Just children's book.
Yeah. A children's book. Aaron is magical.
Yeah.
He can wet his own pants.
All right. What are we going to do? I've seen that happen. Right after this, we're going to be just banging out some Arcadia quests. That's what we're here for as well.
Listeners, we are doing so much work to make sure that you guys are...
Yeah, we're calling it work.
So much work. Just making sure you guys know exactly what Arcadia Quest is about.
Yeah.
This is definitely going to be the probably the most thoroughly investigated
game we've done so far. Because we're so pumped about it that we could have released the review... we could have recorded it in a couple of days' time and then released it. But we wanted to go deep with it, right? So we've just played 2-3 scenarios, and how many is there altogether? About 8 or something like that?
Well, there's six to play to complete the campaign. We've done 2, so, but we're only still at that very introductory level.
I think we do the full circle of level 1 games and then go in a circle.
Wow.
You guys don't know what we're talking about now.
But you will.
But we kept spilling out of the pod, which wasn't the pod. This is the board game room, RPG room, and just telling everyone about it, going, this game's awesome. You need to play this.
We're almost overplaying our hand.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
So everyone's excited about it. So we thought if we're going to put this pod, the interview pod out, we better tell everyone the password for the sweet deal. So I spoke to Dave from Good Games, and I think he said, I'm going to guess now.
Oh, no. Guess.
I think he said... you get it for $10 off if you say the following password. I'm not so sure, but if you just go up there and say the following password, you're going to get a deal on a Arcadia Quest.
It's going to be some sweet deals.
I think that's the deal.
Or an eyebrow raise or something.
Hmm.
No, he knows about this, right?
He knows about it. He's on board.
So, Justin, what's the password?
The password is this week, ladies and gentlemen, is Grom.
Because you are the master of Grom.
I was the master of Grom for one game so far.
Yeah, and then who killed him?
He's got a 50-50 strike rate.
I think what we did, we cracked him.
Yeah.
We cracked the Grom code.
By studying up on Arcadia Quest. Yeah. First time we played it, we got a few of the rules wrong. Grom totally dominated. He's a barbarian berserker. So that's the password, Grom. And Justin went crazy with him. But then we figured out a few things and...
rained me back in.
Yeah.
It was nuts. But yeah, get hyped for
definitely.
Arcadia Quest, ladies and gents. It's going to be pretty rad.
It's very cool. What's it in a nutshell at the moment? What do we describe it as?
I say Fisher and Paykel Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, that's what you said. And I agree with you in the sense that
Fisher
that's the
Paykel
way it looks.
Fisher and Paykel or Fisher Price? Can you wash your
you take this box, put your dirty dishes in. Shake it up. Fisher
comes
Price.
Out smelling rosy.
Fisher Price.
Fisher Price.
We're talking round hole, square peg, D&Ds. It's going to be really, really interesting to talk about next week, I believe, or next month.
Yeah, well, so it's what's going to be is this episode's out now. 4 nights time, you get your magic one, with the hardcore magic crew. 4 nights after that, Arcadia review, Arcadia Quest review. But you can go and get Arcadia Quest the entire time or put it on order at Good Games.
Yeah, if you
go
just
go in there, see the guys.
Yeah, if you just can't
say
wait,
Grom.
If you just can't wait for the tip of the hat, here's like a premonition, I guess, for Arcadia Quest. It's good.
Yeah, we can sense that.
It's in the air.
Don't need a Tumblr account for that.
No. And you probably better get in there quick for the ones that are in store at Cannington now, because I think we've already tipped off enough people that they're just busting into this and they're going to get in. So, yeah, get in there and grab it. You will not be unhappy. It's good fun. And, yeah, we should get some... You said a mate of yours painted up the minis.
Yeah, Andy Hayes.
We should get some photos of that.
Contact him, see if we can get some photos, because they look really good. Yeah. The ones that I saw, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So Andy Hayes actually won the painting competition.
In
Warhammer. Oh,
the nice. Rockingham one?
Yeah, the Rockingham
one. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
sweet.
He took away a prize. So,
congrats to Andy.
Yeah.
So it'll be worth looking at.
Oh, yeah, and quick seven-line hand mention to Kian de Vries Turnell, who won the game day.
Yeah, saw that too. Nice play, Matt. Nice What's play. With the eyes?
I don't know. He's a madman.
I think he was trying to hypnotise someone.
He was. Yeah. All right. Should we just leave it at that, getting some Arcadia Quest?
Yeah, let's go play.
Let's do it.
All right. See you later. I'm just going to play the outro with no one yelling over it. Same as the intro. Hey, maybe this is the way we roll from now on.
Who knows?
Catch you guys soon.